Hello, hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is your girl Mitzi, and this is Mitzi. Let's think about it. Today, we are thinking about emotions as tools. When somebody usually thinks as about their emotions, I usually don't think of them as tools. So, luckily for me, I have Ed as my special guest who's going to help us truly think about this topic in a different perspective. So, thank you so much, Ed, for coming on my show. I am so grateful for you to s share some of your time with me, so to be on here to share this topic.
Oh, I'm glad to be here, Mitzi, and I'm looking forward to sharing some good information with your viewers.
Good, good. I am glad. So, I guess let's go straight to it. Why do you think the biggest problem with humans and just the emotions in general? Because it seems like there's just this obstacle, right? What is your opinion on that?
There's a huge obstacle, and there's a couple of reasons for it, Mitzi. One reason is because in our culture, we do not get much information or education about what emotions are. It's assumed that we're going to know and that we're going to be able to deal with them. That's the first problem. The second problem is the very nature of what emotions are. You mentioned earlier that emotions are tools. Yes, they are. But before they're tools, they're survival mechanisms. We have had emotions since we lived in caves. And in fact, it was our emotions that enabled us to survive as a species. As cave people, we didn't have sharp teeth and we didn't have sharp claws, but we had our emotions. So the emotions developed to both alert us to threats and to prepare our bodies to deal with those threats so that we could either run or we could stand and fight. Now, because of that, the emotions work very quickly. They happen subconsciously. Let me kind of put it into perspective for you. The way the emotion cycle works is this. We are constantly scanning our environments for threats. That's an evolutionary adaptation, and it's been around forever. So when our brains perceive, the amygdala perceives a threat, it automatically sends a signal through the thalamus to say, go on alert. That happens very quickly. Now, when we were cave people, that's all we needed. But since we're no longer living in caves and we've evolved, we have the thinking part of our brain, which is the cerebral cortex, which now enables us to think about, to assess, and to validate what's actually happening and choose how we want to respond. But your original question was, why are emotions so problematic? And that is because the automatic quick response that happens to us, we don't think we have control over, we think it controls us. So, because we don't like feelings such as anger, perhaps, or those kinds of feelings, we say feelings are messy. They appear to control us. So, rather than be controlled by the emotions, we as today think it's easier just to get rid of them, and it isn't. So then you've got to get three, three, two, you've got two issues. One is we don't know what emotions are. Two, we feel controlled by them, so we want to get rid of them. And those are the two issues that make it difficult for us today to deal with emotions, which is why I wrote my books to explain what they are and how to use them.
That's good. I mean, I really like your explanation. I think when you said that it goes back to caveman status when we are basically in survival mode, that really put into perspective because I remember another guest actually said we are just constantly in our default to survival. Our emotions are just reacting in that way. And I was just like, this is the second time somebody said that. So I guess this is true. You know what I mean? This is a repetitive thing that I think more people need to start considering and realizing that maybe you're just feeling the way you're feeling because you're just naturally trying to survive in a situation that you may not fully understand or don't know what to do, how to react. And I like the fact that you said that when they're problematic and how we try to block it off and just shove it down and avoid it. And it sounds like basically to resolve that is to embrace it. I mean, is that right? Is to embrace each feeling as it comes? I mean, do you have to ask yourself those hard questions when you're facing an emotion? I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
Yes and yes. Yes, you want to embrace the feelings and understand what they are. And yes, you want to ask the questions and appraise the situation that you're in terms of its threat value. And
okay.
the reason for that is this. We are still very much cave people. That's the primitive part of our brain. Some people call it the reptilian brain, if you will, but it's there and we have to acknowledge it. But we also have to acknowledge that we've evolved beyond that. And so we have the ability to take a look at what's going on. But what I want your listeners to understand is it's not easy to do. It is doable, but it's not easy and it takes practice.
I like that you said that it's not easy because it doesn't sound easy. You know, it sounds like it's something that you need to train yourself. And that was going to be my next question, but please, I didn't mean to interrupt. If you don't mind, continue.
No,
this is intriguing
that's okay.
to me.
There are a couple of easy steps to think about, but you have to force yourself to think about it and do it and make it a habit. The first step is when you experience an emotion, regardless of what the emotion is, whether it's anger or it's sadness or it's grief or it's anxiety, is to take a deep breath. Now, when you take a deep breath, what you're doing is you're forcing yourself to relax, if you will. It lowers your energy level. So what that does is that creates some psychological space between you and what the threat is. So you take a deep breath. Now, your listeners might say, wait a minute, if I'm happy, why do I want to take a deep breath? Yeah, it's a good question. You don't have to. But if you take a deep breath with every emotion, then when you get anxious, you'll think about taking a deep breath.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. If you do it in a constant every time, just naturally, just remind yourself to just breathe in the moment. That is the best practice because it does kind of like center yourself. Because sometimes I catch myself doing that when my anxiety is rising. I'm like, no, Betsy, breathe, you know, just catch yourself real quick, because sometimes just that second of just breathing can make you realize like you're moving too much in your mind, you know, because I feel like sometimes we do that, you know. And I guess what is another way to handle that besides breathing? Because sometimes breathing doesn't do it, because I can breathe until I'm exasperating.
Exactly.
But sometimes it doesn't work. So what is another good tip that can help?
The second step is to take a step backwards. To physically take a step backwards, if you will, from the situation. That when you're dealing with anger, that creates physical space. But when you're dealing with anxiety, it also says to you, okay, I'm moving back from the situation, so that I now can gain some perspective on that situation. Mm-hmm. So you take a deep breath and you take a step back. By taking a step back, it's also alerting you, it's saying to your brain, hey, there's something going on here that I need to take a look at. And I'm backing away from it so that I gain perspective on it.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point.
Mm-hmm. So you take a deep breath, you take a step back, and then you ask yourself the question, what is the nature of the threat?
That's a good point.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're back in survival mode. We're right back to that caveman status. Okay.
We are. But now, then what you need to understand is what the information that emotion is giving you. Because each emotion gives you a different piece of information. The message of anger, when you get angry, or when somebody gets angry at you, what that emotion is telling you is that you or they perceive a threat that you are ready to go to war over and eliminate. Anger prepares you for battle. So when you get angry, what you're saying is there's a threat there and I'm going to annihilate it. So my body's gearing up and I'm going to war. So if you understand that, we'll just take anger. You're getting angry, you take a deep breath, you take a step back and you ask, what is the nature of the threat? Because the threat might not be real. The threat might be that somebody has misunderstood what's happening to you. Mm-hmm. But if the threat is indeed real and you're being physically threatened or you're being psychologically threatened, you may have to choose what you're going to do. Are you going to attack or are you going to run? Are you going to leave? But so that's anger. Now you talked about anxiety. The message of anxiety is there's a future-based threat. The threat is out there somewhere, and that threat may be harmful to me. So then you can ask, okay, how real is the threat and what do I need to do about it? So if you take a look at anxiety, the reason why most people don't like anxiety is because they perceive anxiety as distress, D-I-S-T-R-E-S-S, as opposed to eustress, E-U-S-T-R-E-S-S. And here's the difference. Distress says, I'm in deep yogurt. This is going to get me and I can't do anything about it. So I'm screwed. But eustress, which is what my students do, eustress says there's a test coming up and I'm worried about it. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take action to eliminate the threat. I'm going to study. So that's how you use anxiety as a strategic tool to alert you to what you need to do about something that's coming up in the future. What am I anxious about? I'm anxious about a job interview. I'm anxious about a test coming up. I'm anxious about calling this person up I've not really met before and asking her out on a date, whatever it happens to be. So if you understand the threat that your anxiety is alerting you to, now you can choose how you want to approach it and what you want to do about it.
I like that. I like that very much. I think you put it in a great perspective where it's easily understood. I think once you put it in that difference between the eustress and the eustress, I was like, huh, eustress. And then you said you turn it to make it useful. And I was just like, that is interesting. Because sometimes we do that when we are able to catch ourselves, we're able to realize, like, you know what, this is a stressful moment, I got to prepare for it. So then we prepare for that event, like the Thanksgiving's coming up, you know, and the holidays, you know, and things like that. So, you know, those are always eustresses, but we also are able to help those anxious moments before it comes. So that's a very good point.
Exactly.
I'm very glad that you are on my show and sharing this with me. Goodness gracious.
I'm glad to be here. So if you think about it now, so you experience an emotion, whatever it is, like anxiety. Let's talk about that since we're here. You take a deep breath. You take a step back from the situation. You ask yourself, what's the nature of the threat? What am I looking at that I'm being anxious about? Not that's making me anxious, because the situation doesn't make you anxious, but you're reacting to it. You're reacting to it with anxiety. So what's the nature of the threat? Well, I've got this coming up. I've got Thanksgiving coming up. Okay, what do I need to do about that event that's coming up so that I can deal with it? And then you make your list or do whatever you're doing. Or you might say, for example, Thanksgiving's coming up. I'm all prepared for it. You know, the family's coming in. Everybody's bringing food. There really is nothing to be anxious about. And then you let it go. I'll give you an example. Years ago, when I was still working, I'm retired now, I was going from my office to the university where I teach. And my stomach was churning. And for me, I know that that's physically telling me that I'm anxious. And that it's also important for you to know how your body alerts you to the specific emotion that you're feeling. Anger, you might feel heat. You might feel energized. But for me, anxiety is my stomach churning. So I'm driving to my class and I'm feeling anxious. And so I'm saying, I took a deep breath. I couldn't step back because I was behind the wheel. That was eliminated. But I could ask the questions. So I said, what's the threat? And I went over in my head. I've prepared my notes. I'm ready for the lecture. Everything's okay at the office. Everything was fine. So I decided to just ignore the anxiety. Now, I'm not ignoring the emotion because I've already validated it. But in this case, I'm saying, who knows? Maybe it's gas. Whatever it was, I don't know.
Right.
Yeah. But what I could have done, and what many people would have done, would have said, I can't figure out what's wrong. I'm in deep yogurt here. So because I can't figure it out, something's going to get me down the road. And that would have been anxiety is distress. Yeah. And I would have gone into a whole spiral behind it. And I'd have been screwed.
Yeah. That's
And so
true.
that's an example of how you look at the emotion and validate the situation and ask what's going on. Now, validating the emotion is important because every emotion you have is a useful tool. You don't want to ignore it. You want to use it as a tool. And so when you do that, then you go into what we talked about before, the breathing and asking the questions. But the emotion is trying to tell you something. Now, it's not always accurate because you might misperceive what's going on.
Yes.
And that's okay too. But when you ask the questions, you are then taking into consideration it might be giving you accurate information or it might not.
That's true. It sounds like when you take a deep breath, you take a step back, you have to basically rationalize the situation in hand, the situation that you are feeling a type of emotion that maybe you are not wanting or uncomfortable with or uncertain. But once you rationalize, then it really gives you a certain perspective to really step into the situation in a better perspective, because I feel that sometimes we have to do that more so when we are getting really angry. We have to rationalize it, really, like, is it really me, or is it that person? Do I really need a forgiveness? Do I really need all this? Like, am I making a big deal? Is it spilt milk? You know what I mean? Like, sometimes we really have to think about that in a good way. And then when you say that's when you start using your emotions as tools. And knowing and understanding your body, because, like you said, when you feel that anxiety, you felt it in your stomach, that bubbly feeling. And for me, when I start to feel embarrassed, I get really hot, and then I start to get anxious and I get really hot, and it just boils my temperature. So right there, I was just like, yeah, that's true, because I've been recognizing that more. I've been trying to step into my emotions when I'm feeling it versus trying to reject it. So when I'm stepping into it, I'm starting to realize, like, this is what I'm feeling. It's okay. And then I start to rationalize and I start to calm down and I start to realize, like, I'm living more in my mind and I'm making it harder when I face reality, and I think a lot of people do that. We have this imagination in our mind of life and how it's going to be, and we make it so fantastic or dramatic that when reality hits, it's either a disappointment or it's unbearable to deal with because it doesn't match what our mind is displaying. So I feel like there's a lot of myth when it comes to emotions, and what would be a myth that you've heard on your end?
Yeah, there are a number of myths. One is that emotions are somehow bad. They're not. And that comes about because some emotions don't feel good. Anger sometimes doesn't feel good. Anxiety doesn't feel good. Sadness may not feel good, but it's important. The message of sadness, by the way, is I've experienced some loss and I need to step back and let myself recover from that loss. So one myth is that emotions are somehow bad. Another myth is that emotions control us. And as I explained earlier,
Yeah, that's true.
in the first part of the emotion cycle, where the emotion does alert us and prepare us, yes, the emotions are controlling us. But after that, no. After that, we now can use the emotions. So somehow the myths are that emotions like anger are bad. They're not. The emotions control us. That's a myth as well. And so those two myths that come about, and they come about because of a lack of misunderstanding. And since I've mentioned emotion management, let me kind of put that into perspective too.
Please.
When we talk about managing our emotions, what management is it's an attempt to lower our arousal level. So when we experience emotion and we take a step back and a deep breath, we are managing the emotion. We are then taking an effort to prevent ourselves from acting out on that emotion. That's emotion management. The problem with management is most treatment groups and things that are written about emotions stop there. I go beyond that because I say, yes, manage your emotion and control your arousal. But then you need to go into emotion mastery. And you master an emotion when you use it as a source of information, which is what we talked about, and give that information to help you decide what you want to do about the situation in which you find yourself. That's mastering the emotion as a strategic tool. Strategic being, how does what I choose to do fit the situation that I'm in? So I suggest to people that you go beyond management. Yes, you control the arousal level, but then you want to go to mastering the emotion.
Yeah, I see. And
you mentioned something else that I wanted to comment on. You said that when you get embarrassed, sometimes you say to yourself, what is it, something that maybe I've done? Have I been wrong? And those are good questions. But you also want to ask, is there something in the situation that I need to be concerned about? Not only what you've done, embarrassment says you've done something wrong. So when in that situation with that emotion, asking yourself what you've done is very good. But if you're angry, asking yourself, perhaps you've done something wrong, may not be the place where you want to start. And see, the other thing that you need to be aware of in our culture, there are display rules in our culture about which emotions can be displayed that are accepted. For men, it's acceptable for a man to be angry. In our culture, it's not acceptable for a woman to be angry. Because when you as a woman get angry, you get labeled.
Mm-hmm.
All kinds of negative labels.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're aware of that, then you may be tempted to say, well, it's not appropriate for me to get angry. And because I can't get angry as a woman, I just have to deny the anger. And I'm saying, you don't want to do that. Years ago, I went into a LinkedIn forum for women, and I identified myself as a man. And I said, I'm really curious, what happens to you when you as a woman express anger? 2,000 responses basically said, nope, can't do it because I get put down, I get labeled, yada, yada, yada. And my response then was that, okay, you need to strategically use your anger, and here's how you do that. You may not be able to express your anger directly, but you can use your anger, which is telling you there's a threat, and you may have to go about it indirectly. And indirectly would be an example. Let's say that a boss is getting too close to you, not in terms of your space and so forth. Maybe you can't get angry at him because of the possibility of retaliation, but you can look at and say, okay, what can I do here? What are my options here? I'm going to use the anger to motivate action, but maybe I have to go about it indirectly. Maybe I have to go to HR, maybe whatever you happen to do. So you use the anger to motivate action, but you don't outwardly display the anger because it may be dangerous for you to do that. So you go about it indirectly. What actions can I take to resolve the situation which won't get me in trouble? Does that make sense?
Oh, it makes perfect sense. To be honest, I think women have been doing that for years because we've realized that we can't express our anger, but we still project out our anger in ways that are indirectly. And that's the reason why people love to call women passive aggressive, because we can't be direct. You know what I'm saying? We have been told for so many years that directness from a woman is inappropriate and it shall not be done, and better to stay quiet and stay pretty than to speak your mind and make people uncomfortable. So trust me, when you said go indirect, I had to think about it for a second, but the more you explained what it was, mm-hmm. I realized that, yeah, we've been doing this forever. I do it to my husband all the time.
Yes, but when I mention it, I want to sanction the anger because the anger is appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
Because maybe there may be situations where you can express it and should express it directly.
Mm-hmm.
So your default may be indirect, but you don't want to eliminate the possibility of expressing it directly, of validating the anger and saying, I'm pissed off. You told me you were going to do such and such and you didn't do it. So what's going on? How can we resolve that?
I absolutely agree. Sometimes we just have to just be direct and just upfront with it, because Just going around the bush sometimes is a drag and it's exhausting. And I sometimes I feel like it's unneeded. I'll rip that band-aid right off real quick. But then other times you have to take a second. You have to really consider the situation, the scenario, the environment that you're in, and you have to see how can you handle it appropriately as well, because everything can be said. It just depends on how it's said with that tone. You know what I mean? And choice of words. That's what I strongly believe. But I know the time is wrapping up with our show, and I feel like we can continue talking for hours on end. This has been such a great time, but you've already been giving us so much great advice and tips. But what could be those lasting words of advice that you can truly leave my audience off with to continue on thinking?
Okay, I would direct your audience to my website, which is theemotionsdoctor.com, theemotionsdoctor.com. When they get there's an index tab on the upper part of the screen. Go to the index tab, click on it, and there's a drop-down menu that'll give you access to all of my 200 plus articles on by category and access to the article. I say that because there's a ton of information there. It's all free, and that's a good place to start.
Yes.
So if they go there, most of their questions will be answered. They can go to Amazon and buy my books, and I'd appreciate that as well, but you have free sources that you can access today.
Awesome.
And the last thing I would say is remember the emotion cycle. And the emotion cycle says you scan your environment, you perceive a threat, you feel the emotion. When you feel the emotion, take a deep breath, take a step back, and ask yourself the question, what's the nature of the threat? If you remember, just take a deep breath, take a step back, and ask yourself, what's the nature of the threat? You'll be way ahead of where most people are in this culture in dealing with their emotions.
Awesome. Great words. Great words of wisdom. Thank you so much, Ed. I really appreciate your time coming on my show. And yes, ladies and gentlemen, if you want to know more about Ed, I do have his website under in my website. Just click under his lovely photo, just right there. Just click it and it goes directly there. He does have so much great content. Like he was talking about the articles, so much great information. I was going through everything and oh my goodness, you are not going to be disappointed with what you're reading because it's free. Like you said, you got to take advantage of stuff that are free because at the end of the day, who does not like free, right? So there
Exactly.
you go. That's the show. Always, always keep thinking, y'all. Bye.